You know the story. You meet the love of your life. You introduce them to your parents. You throw a big party and invite all your friends. You go on a honeymoon in the Bahamas or some exotic location. You carry your partner across the threshold of your new home. And then, after all the grains of rice have fallen and the last piece of wedding cake is gone from your freezer, it's now time to have that talk. It's time to discuss finances. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, a look at love and money. What should couples do before exchanging vows? How can you share or distribute responsibility for managing household finances? And then, how do you deal with what to do if that love falls apart? Join our Cash Money crew of financial advisors on a journey from the honeymoon to divorce court on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. You never hear the term marriage for no money down, like you do with offers of houses and cars. But getting married is one of the most important financial decisions you'll ever make, one of the most long-term investments and most important assets you'll ever have, or stand to lose. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. And now to talk about this conundrum with financial advice for the married and divorced, we have...
It's time now for financial planning advice with the Cash Money Crew.
Yes, joining us now in the studio, our Cash Money Crew, members of the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City, Dan Matthews of Step Rothwell, Alex Petrovic of Petrovic Financial Services, and Sandy Weaver, Financial Security Advisors. They're all nodding their heads to their theme music. They love it. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Why is money, Sandy, such a hard subject to tackle for young people or people headed into marriage?
It seems to be a taboo subject, or it seems to be a subject that people, it's not as sexy to talk about that as it is other things. There's usually a conflict to begin with because people usually approach money differently in couples.
Why is it so hard to talk about, Dan?
Well, there's a lot of anxiety sometimes with past experiences that one of the somebody in the relationship has had. Again, I agree with Sandy. It's a little bit taboo, and you're not always willing to show your cards in essence, or what you have, and open up and express that to somebody because you're fearful of, you know, well, they may be coming after it, or you're a little bit maybe possessive about your belongings. So yeah, there's a lot of things that can come into play when talking about money within a couple.
It seems so fundamental, though, Alex. You talk about your past. You talk about your deepest fears. In some instances, you even take your clothes off in the courtship process. But you don't talk about money.
Yeah, it is interesting. As I was preparing for the show, thinking about it, and even in my own experience, I think from just the very get-go, and you know, in high school or college, it's just not. You don't think about that relationship of how to talk about money, and people don't. I mean, they just do not, unless maybe there's some real disparate differences in amount of money that one of them has over the other. But people just are reluctant for a lot of reasons.
And given that, what are the typical oversights that couples make about money when they're getting into marriage or getting into an engagement? What do people overlook?
Well, I think it's just the honesty of just saying, let's talk about what we have, you know, what we want, what we're fearful of. And I think they just make the mistake of actually asking those questions of each other and disclosing what they have and don't have and what they do want.
And they don't typically do this, do they?
Yeah. Not always. I mean, yeah, full disclosure is very important. And so actually opening up your financial book, per se, with your assets and liability and laying them out on the table is a good practice and one that everybody should do before they walk down the aisle. And also just talking about philosophy. You know, do you come from a frugal background? Were your parents spendthrifts? Those are the kind of things that normally come out after folks get married rather than, you know, flushing all that out, flushing it out before they get married. So
So what does that sit down look like, Sandy Weaver? The earnings, assets, debts, and financial commitment due diligence. What does that look like?
Well, I would recommend that they have patched together a personal financial statement. You know, what's in your bank accounts? What's in your investment accounts? Do you have debts? Do you have credit card debt? Do you have student loan debt? Do you have a mortgage on that house that you own? And both compare and look at the other person's. And then it's also important to take a look at those salaries. What's the net off your paycheck? And how do you envision that that will get deployed? Will it go to joint expenses, or do you intend to keep 50% of it and spend it on your wants or needs? Have those discussions and see how it's going to work out.
This is a should list.
Yes.
But it's not very common, is it?
Well, that's a good question. I have to admit that in our practice, we don't have too many clients that are just getting married for the first time, number one. So I would say that it seems like it doesn't, because all the studies that you see and read talk about finances being one of the biggest reasons that people end up divorcing. So at our level of the how we interface with clients, most of the time we don't see them that often at that stage on the first marriage.
What about you, Dan?
Well, I don't know if premarital counseling, which you know is required by a lot of couples, if it focuses enough on finances. I know they breach the subject, but more so I think they're talking about conflict resolution and more of the non-monetary type issues. So I would say, you know, it's not focused on enough. We don't focus on enough personal finance issues just even in at the high school level. So, I don't think there's enough of it, and it needs to be talked about more.
Sounds like there's a niche there, Sandy.
Well, I would like to recommend that younger couples who are just getting married for the first time, that they go buy Quicken or start using Mint, which is an online budgeting tool, and work through what that budget's going to look like. Look at the debt that they have to pay down, set priorities on that. Look at the reserves, the emergency fund that they need to build. How is that going to happen? And then look at their retirement goals and just do a real quick and dirty, but, you know, try to save, you know, eventually get to the point where you're saving 10%. But work that through side by side in a budget. And usually in couples, sometimes you'll see one's a spender, more frugal, one's a spender and one's a saver who's more frugal. So you want to balance those two tendencies. But both of them need to stay involved. Both need to understand. Because if both don't stay involved, then they're not on the same page and they're not seeing the same things.
So your philosophy is, whoa, whoa, whoa. You're going to get quick and dirty? Do it with Quicken.
Yes, yes, yes.
Dan?
Yeah, and that's a great idea. And take that even, you know, take it up one more level. Practice this. You know, have monthly meetings about personal finances before you get married. How's this going to work when you're actually married? And if you practice it and kind of work out some of the kinks beforehand, and I think you'll also kind of uncover some things that you didn't know about your future spouse may surprise you. And it's better to work it out before the marriage rather than, you know, having to deal with it like what we're going to do in the second half of the show when the divorce is final.
Right. And you're talking about expectations. That's what you're segueing into, Dan. How do you define or set expectations, Alex? Financial expectations with a potential spouse.
Well, I think you just have to be open and start with, let's develop a plan. Let's talk about what our individual goals are. And they could be different. For one, it could be a house. Another, it's a car. We've known people that wanted a boat ahead of time. Or, you know, in this day of age, too, a lot of young people are coming out of college with debts. Is that a priority? Do we want to pay it off early or not? But to disclose, whose responsibility is the debt? So it's really just, I mean, upfront talking to begin with and then develop a plan. And I heard someone say not long ago, they said, try to keep it low-key to begin with on smaller issues and then kind of build on the bigger issues as they're down there. And that's also about when are you going to have kids? Are they going to go to private school and the whole bit? But
what is low-key? And what is
I think low-key is talking about just much easier decisions like, you know, are we going to go on vacations? Stuff that maybe isn't so big as, you know, especially if there is some potential conflict in the relationship at the very beginning.
Are there any red flags in this process to look for in defining roles and responsibilities? Is there a point where you should stop?
Yes, I believe so. I think if you have somebody who's a spender who doesn't want to get involved and wants somehow, and I say this because we see some of these things. We see couples where one is not involved, doesn't come to the meetings, and yet, you know, doesn't want to downsize a house, wants to retire early, wants to be able to spend, you know, six figures every year, and yet somehow the other spouse is just supposed to, quote, make it happen. You know, those you really need to have both involved so that both see what's going on. I might suggest that one person reconciles the accounts and the other person pays the bills.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our Cash Money clique of financial advisors are here, and we're talking about the money and the honey, love and finances. Our guests are members of the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City, Dan Matthews of Stepan Rothwell, Alex Petrovic of Petrovic Financial Services, and Sandy Weaver, Financial Security Advisors. Kansas City, are you newlyweds just starting out looking to get some financial advice? Also, if you're a battle-tested husband or wife, what advice would you impart to a young couple, or what advice do you wish you would have gotten about your finances? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write into us at centralstandard@kcur.org. @kcurcst is also our Twitter handle. Get in on this conversation about money and honey, love and finances, or the lack thereof in both circumstances. Once again, that number is 816-235-2888, 816-235-2888 for newlyweds or battle axes. Why is it important for women to take an active role in managing the household finances, Sandy?
Oh, goodness. It is so important because lots of times women tend to be spenders, and if they get involved in the household budget, they'll see what's doable and what's not doable. And women also, I think, tend to be very active. And some of our – usually there's one person that handles finances more than the other. Women can do a great job at that, and we have some clients that do that. They are great at finding items on sale or reducing expenses once they figured out that's something that they need to do or want to do. They're good at getting agreement by all the family members on working towards a goal. So women can do an excellent job when it comes to finances.
You're shaking your head on the spending part there, Dan. Talk about that.
Well, yeah, I was just having a little bit of fun with that. But, you know, I think women play a very important role in the household management of the finances. In fact, you know, often I'll – as a financial planner in our own house, I tend to think – and this is one of my faults – that I know what we should do. I have the experience. And I think maybe that is – common for a lot of men, because that's traditionally the role of the man in the house is to take care of the finances. But, you know, really, the women should have a say too. And oftentimes what they say and their opinions make a lot of sense. And so we as men should listen to them more and be willing to talk about things more just to create a good discussion that creates compromises and create conflict, which all marriages have conflict, and that's not a problem. But it's just a matter of getting to that compromise that's the most important.
That's good advice about being able to be a listener, Dan. But do you ever get tempted, if you're sitting there in the kitchen and you just get tempted to say, which one of us is the financial planner? And you kind of raise your hand. Oh, okay.
I have pulled that card before, yes, and played it. But that's just, you know, that's a unique experience that I – or unique quality that I have, I guess, in our own household. But, yeah, I have pulled that card and – I can't say it's always been – even when I say that and make the decision, it hasn't always been the right one.
But. And sometimes when you pull that card, it was decline, right? Liz writes, I've been with my boyfriend for quite a while. While I can see myself spending the rest of my life with him, I cannot link my finances with his. He has awful credit, and mine is pristine. If we get married, will this destroy my credit too? How can we help improve his finances for a possible future wedding? That's Liz's conundrum. We're talking about money and finances today on Central Standard with our Cash Money clique. How do we address Liz's issue? Her credit is pristine. His is abysmal.
That's an excellent situation to talk about. One thing you have to watch if you want to commingle assets. By commingling, I mean taking an account that you have. For example, Liz might have a savings account and putting her boyfriend's name on it. All of a sudden, then his creditors may be able to attach that money if it gets down to that. So that would be a case where you deliberately do not want to commingle an asset. Likewise, you know, she probably does not want to add her name to those credit card debts or what other debts that he has. So titling of assets is really important. You want to sit down and have a talk when you're reviewing those assets and debts, that statement, and saying, you know, if we want to have – if you see any danger points, maybe then you don't commingle the assets. You sure don't want to commingle the debts. And then you keep joint assets to a minimum. Maybe you have a pot that you put part of the paycheck in each month and pay the utilities, that type of approach.
Alex, talk about the titling of assets, as it were.
Right. Yeah. Once you add someone to an account, then you need that person's, you know, signature to get it back off. So obviously, that would not be a good idea. And then I think in the caller's instance, that would not be a good idea at this point. And I think she's. It does sound like she's aware enough to know there's an issue there. That's the start. I think before she would move forward, she'd be well counseled to, you know, discuss those issues and see some progress in terms of reducing debt before you go forward.
Kansas City, are you newlyweds just starting out and looking to get some financial advice? Also, if you're a battle-tested husband or wife, what advice would you impart to a young couple or wish you would have gotten before you got married? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write into us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Carrie in KC, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm more the battle-tested wife. I've actually been married before. I'm now remarried, same with my husband. And this time around, my advice would be always protect your credit score above all else. Pay your bills on time, protect your credit score. And also, what works for my husband and I is we actually keep everything separate. We don't have a savings account together, a checking account together. We don't even share a credit card. And what we did is we sat down and we talked about all of our monthly expenses and bills. Obviously, you have to have two incomes coming in, so we both work. And then we share those expenses. He takes on certain bills. I take on certain bills. We know they get paid. We both contribute to our savings. We have a financial advisor, so we know our retirement's taken care of and our college funds for our kids. And then the rest of it is fun money. And that way, I'm not kind of nitpicking at what he chooses to spend his fun money on, and he's not doing the same to me if I want to go shopping and splurge on shoes. I don't have to worry about, you know, you kind of take the emotional factor out of paying bills when you do it that way. And it, you know, there's a trust component, but we sit down and we talk every few months to make sure everything's still on target or maybe our expenses have changed. And it works out really well because we don't ever really fight about money at all. We know things are taken care of and we know we're doing okay.
Thank you, Carrie, for your contribution to the discussion. She's getting a thumbs up here in the studio for all of her methods on separate accounts. That's a good idea.
Excellent idea. They have an approach that works for them. One thing when folks are sitting down having this conversation about how do we mesh our money styles, there are lots of different approaches, and this is just one. Sometimes you can apply a prorate approach. If somebody makes 40 grand, you make 20 grand, then they pay two-thirds of bills, you pay one-third. All different kinds of approaches, you know, you see them all.
What about the second part of Liz's question? How can she help improve their finances for a possible future wedding? Now, they're working on improving their finances, but they're likely going to spend more money on wedding preparation and wedding and maybe go into the marriage in debt or owing something. Talk about that, the preparation for the wedding and the preparation for the finances. Are those counterintuitive?
I think they go hand in hand. I think it's like a down payment on a house. You know, most folks know that they need to have 15% or 20%. Better yet, if you want to get married, set a budget for it. And marriage wedding budgets, you know, are all over the place. They can be done extremely low cost or they can be extremely expensive. But also then take those debts into consideration. How much of those is the target you want to have paid down before you go? And having two goals at once, you know, paying down part of the debt and chipping into a pot that's saving up for the wedding would be a really good first exercise for them.
What do you think about that, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, if in her case, I believe her partner had really bad credit.
Right.
And so he needs to deal with that and start dealing with it now. If they have a timeline in place when they want to buy a home, then it could take several months for him to clean that up and get his credit score up to a point, you know, where they could possibly qualify for a loan from a mortgage lender as a joint borrower.
How long would that typically take?
Well, I would, it's at least 6 months, maybe even longer, depending on on what's inside the credit report. So first things first, he needs to get one of his free credit reports, start looking at that. If there's any errors on it, he needs to get those fixed. So, yeah, being very proactive and really finding out where you stand before the marriage is very important. It will make things a lot smoother, especially when you do start trying to purchase big ticket items together.
Jane in Lenexa, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, my name is Jane, and I wanted to tell about my situation. I've been divorced for 20 years, but my ex-husband has bad credit, and so I continually get calls for the past 5 or 6 years for his bad debt.
20,
plus now the
You've been divorced for 20 years, and you still get?
Yes.
Wow. Tell us more about
now,
that.
Plus now there's, I'm getting calls for his second wife for her bad debt.
How is that even possible?
Your name is forever linked in the computer database systems. And then somebody sells the bad paper to somebody else, and the process starts all over again. And you tell them again that you are not really responsible for that debt. But again, the paper gets sold again, and you have to go through the whole process again and again and again.
Wow, Jane, that's quite a horror story. How did Jane end up going through this? 20 years after the divorce?
Well, I wonder if her name was on the debt, if it was like a joint debt, credit card or auto loan or whatever. And so then she is responsible, whether you like it or not. And you can have a property settlement agreement pursuant to a divorce that absolves you of that, but that does not unwind the legal responsibility.
Well, what can she do? Silence.
Yeah, I think you can go to a lawyer, but silence. I think your options are limited.
Well, speaking of which, should couples consider executing a prenuptial agreement? And if so, when and how do you approach that talk? Because I'm sure Jane could have used one.
Yeah, well, obviously before the marriage, and because after the marriage is finalized, then obviously you can't change that. But I think it should be up for discussion, especially if one brings in significant assets to the marriage, or there is potentially a significant inheritance coming down the line, and that's been disclosed, and so. You know, it may be very important to the older generations to keep that money within the family. They want to protect their bloodline, and so if that's the case, then that discussion has to happen, and everybody has to come to be on board with it. And I think in a lot of cases, it's a fine. You know, prenups, there's kind of a negative connotation, I think, with those, but they can serve a very important role in the disposition of assets later if things do go bad.
We're talking romance and finance with our Cash Money Click here on Central Standard. Marion Liberty writes, we've been married for over 25 years. Her and her husband has. In the Catholic Church, you must go through premarital classes before you can get married. I wish before you get marriage licenses in the county, you also had to read, for instance, David Ramsey's Financial Peace book. She says, when you're young, dumb, and in love, money is your last thought. It should move way up the list. When you can't pay the rent, it's hard to be romantic. That's an understatement from Mary. What do you think about that? Should there be a mandate for having some kind of financial training?
Well, they say that you can get married easier than you can get a driver's license, quicker as well. So, yeah, well, I don't know about legislating that, number one. But, you know, in addition on the prenuptial, I think it's great. I think if there's, for a couple to at least talk about it, and if there's a hesitancy on one side or the other, I think automatically it throws
that's kind of a tipper,
red flag.
Right.
And that prenup can be beneficial to both because it does start a conversation. It creates a legal conversation as well. And, getting married is a legal contract. So I am really in favor of it in most cases.
What are some best practices that couples can adopt to create a strong financial foundation? If you had to sort of go down a laundry list and you were sitting down with a couple, what are some best practices? We'll go around starting with Sandy.
I think I would recommend a quarterly meeting on finances to force communication. I think I believe I would recommend that both parties stay aware of the cash flow, the budgeting process. We've had different recommendations, you know, that one pay bills, the other reconcile, that both come to meetings. We always try to encourage that. The other such is that both are aware of the steps it takes to reach the goals that they've said that they have. So that they're both on the same page. You know, we can't do this vacation this year because we've said we want to do this with it instead, so that you have good communication. I also think it's important, though, to go down all the steps of good financial planning. We've been talking a lot about budgeting, but as Dan has indicated, you know, some estate planning gets into play also, how you title assets. We watch out for folks and don't commingle assets sometimes, and we'll tell them why. But that's another discussion to have on titling. It's also important to have a discussion on estate planning. You know, when you get married, you know, especially if it's a second marriage, you know, if you don't talk about who's on the beneficiary line, that's something that really needs to occur too.
I'll see you at the quarterly. How do you feel about that, Dan?
I'll see you at the monthly meeting. I think you should have them every month at least. So first of all, I would just start with both sitting down as a couple and coming up with your goals and objectives and writing those down and having a working document that you're constantly referring to, because life happens and, you know, people change. And so always having something to refer back to say, hey, this is what we talked about 2 years ago. This is what we wanted to do back then. What's different now? Why are we not allocating our financial resources towards meeting that goal? What are we allocating our financial resources toward now? And so looking at that document all the time is very, very important, and constantly updating it. And I think it'll keep you both on target and, you know, happier in terms of your financial lives. One other thing, Carrie mentioned it earlier when she called in about the fund monies accounts. I am a really big advocate for the fund money. Just because, you know, I think there's always has to be some money set aside for each person in the marriage, just to be able to spend it without any questions asked. You don't want to have money. You don't want your spouse constantly asking you, well, where did that money go? Or what did you spend it on? Because, you know, I like to go out and blow money sometimes and just know that I'm not going to get anything out of it. It's just fun. And so just being able to have the freedom to do that, I think, is kind of liberating within a marriage.
Making sure your bills are paid are a good idea before you come home in a George Washington hat made of money with a cigar in your mouth. Just FYI. Alex, some parting best practices as we go into break.
Well, I think to reiterate what we've already heard, it's just so important. Short-term, medium, long-term goals, get them established. I mean, write them down and then refer to them. But you need to have all of those three. And then lastly, you know, as you're in the dating process, you know, you have to be honest in your observation of your potential partner. I mean, you see these things. I think the call that we had in earlier, she said, you know, I have a very pristine, you know, credit rating and no debt, and my boyfriend doesn't. I mean, that says something. And you need, you know, I think the caller was right on. But, I mean, some people don't. They think those things will change, or I can change that person. I mean, I think you need to be really observant of those habits. Those habits are hard to break.
Okay. Our guests are members of the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City, Dan Matthews of Stepan Rothwell, Alex Petrovic of Petrovic Financial Services, and Sandy Weavers with Financial Security Advisors. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we're going to talk about the breaks of managing one's finances during a divorce. Kansas City, are you newlyweds just starting out looking for some financial advice? Also, if you're a battle-tested husband or wife, what advice would you impart upon a young couple or a couple getting ready to get married for the first time? What advice do you wish you would have gotten? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write into us at centralstandard@kcur.org. We'll continue this discussion. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. The poet Margaret Atwood says a divorce is like an amputation. You survive it, but there's less of you. And when it comes to the money, there can certainly be less to be had, as assets, financial holdings, and even custody of children are all fragmented with a given couple's demise. Certainly like amputation. And now we continue our two-part discussion of love and money with our Cash Money Click of financial advisors. The topic is what to do during and after a divorce. Our guests are members of the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City, Dan Matthews of Stepan Rothwell, Alex Petrovic of Petrovic Financial Services, and Financial Security Advisors Sandy Weaver. Kansas City, are you newlyweds just starting out or looking to get some financial advice? Also, if you're battle-tested, husband or wife, what advice would you impart upon a young couple or a couple getting married for the first time? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write into us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Before we get into the nuances of divorce, how can we prepare newlyweds or married couples for that potential eventuality without causing ruckus in the first place? There was a caller in the first half who 20 years later is dealing with her ex-husband's debts. 20 years later.
Yes.
Talk about that.
One of the things, when you're getting divorced, which Jane, I wish would have done, perhaps did not, you can write a letter where you have joint credit card debt or any other open lines of credit, LOC. You can write a letter to the debt holder saying, as of this date, I will no longer be responsible for additions to this debt line. And then have that registered mail, get proof that it was received. And so, you know, additional charges on credit cards after that date, you can't be on the hook for.
That at least sets the intention.
Right.
And so she didn't set that in motion, probably had a lot of stuff commingled still over the years. Because 20 years later is quite a long time.
Right, I agree. Yeah, there's something, you know, if her name was on the debt and there had never been any notification, then rightly so, it doesn't matter what a property settlement agreement says. Rightly so, those creditors will go after her.
Alex Petrovic, what's the financial advisor's role in working with clients that are getting a divorce?
Well, you have to be very careful there because they're still a partner. They're legally still, and if you are working with them and being paid to work with them, I think you got to be extremely careful not to take sides. You can give some, I think, in my opinion, some broad suggestions in that. And there are people in our business that are certified financial planners in this town that do that sort of counseling, but it's aside from the rest of their business. And I think you have to be very careful and respectful of this process. It's a very difficult one.
Dan, you once had a situation where you had clients that were joint clients and then were still clients after they proceeded in a collaborative divorce, you called it. Talk about a collaborative divorce versus the ugly ones we see.
Yeah, they're both still clients today. In this case, it was a collaborative divorce, meaning that they both accepted, I guess, the terms of the divorce. There wasn't really any argument. The children were out of the household, so there wasn't any child support nor alimony. So they both knew what they were going to get after it was all said and done, and so I was able to help them through that process before the divorce and then after the divorce and then working with them independently. So, but other if it's a mediated divorce or one where they're going to court to fight it out, as a financial advisor, I would have to step away from that and just let the dust settle on that, and then maybe step back in with one or the other. But yeah, you can't really represent both during that process.
Cheryl and Olathe, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to add that, you know, I'm a battle-tested wife, and one of the best things my husband and I did 20 years ago when we got married was to have three checking accounts, and we each took the same amount into our personal checking account every month for personal expenditures, haircuts, clothing, and the like, and the rest remained in the joint account to pay for household bills, groceries, things to do with the children, and that sort of thing. So we each have our own play money to do with as we choose or save, and there was no questioning each other on that, and what remained in the joint account, you know, was used as a savings or to pay the bills.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. We're hearing that a lot, fragmentation of funds. Is that something that's recommended?
I think it's appropriate for those that want to do it that way. I think it is a personal issue on how you want to do it. I think that makes sense for those that want to do it. Other people use one account and everything's paid out of it. But, you know, in this day of online banking as well, you see real quick who spent what where, and it shows up pretty fast. But
what might be the difference, Sandy Weaver, in the legal separation stage as opposed to a full-blown divorce? How might you approach those two differently?
Boy, they're very similar. In a legal separation stage, you don't really have to split assets yet. You know, that's what causes all the friction usually. But there are arrangements to keep cash flow going for both parties. But as far as how you split up assets and debts, that nut is delayed down the road.
Frida in Overland Park, welcome to Central Standard.
Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine. I just wanted to say two things. One, we switched over to charging everything. And then at the end of the month, we go over that statement, and everything is on there. And but you have to make sure you can pay off the balance every month, which we do. But we found that that was really helpful to see where a lot of the play money was going. And the other thing is, years ago, when we first got married, 35 years ago, we had to discuss anything that cost over $100. As we've gone through our marriage, we still do it even now. We don't really have to, but if it's over $500, we have to have a little discussion on it to make sure we do want to spend the money on that purchase.
Thank you, Frida, for your contribution to the conversation about love and money that we're having today on Central Standard. It's a good thing that she adjusted that figure for inflation.
because
nowadays, if you're going to talk to somebody about any expenditure over $100, it's like, honey, I'm going to get some gas.
Yeah.
Is that okay for me to fill up my car and get some gas? How are implications different from men and women, Sandy Weaver? We've been hearing from a lot of battle-tested wives, not many husbands. What's the difference in dealing with finances with men and women, the attitudes?
Well, it's interesting. I think sometimes women, and I think sometimes women tend to deal with smaller details, and men seem to deal with the larger goals. And if there is a split, it probably follows along that line. And again, women tend to run household budgets, and men are supposedly in charge of investments and making sure that the retirement goal is met. But again, I don't know if that's a fair statement, because we really see couples where usually we're seeing one versus the other, and it's not always the man.
It's never a good idea, though, to cede financial management to one spouse, right?
I don't think so. I mean, I think you can, pass that off to one person, and they can basically take care of all the details and everything. But I think you still have to come back to a point where you both talk about it and not just, you know, one blindly does it without the other's input.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR FM, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our Cash Money clique of financial advisors are here talking about the money and the honey, love and finances. We're in the divorce portion of our show, how to deal with finances after a divorce. Our guests are members of the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City, Dan Matthews of Stepan Rothwell, Alex Petrovic of Petrovic Financial Services, and Sandy Weaver of Financial Security Advisors. Kansas City, are you newlyweds just starting out looking to get some financial advice? Also, if you're a battle-tested husband or wife, what advice would you impart upon a young couple or a couple about to get married? What advice do you wish you would have gotten? Let's hear from some guys, man. Man up and call in at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write into us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Once again, the number is 816-235-2888 for battle-tested couples or couples looking to get married. And we have a bevy of financial advice here for Central Standard today. It's often bandied about, Alex Petrovic, that financial difficulties are one of the leading causes of divorce. Why is that, from your estimation?
Well, finances are, you know, very integral in your lifestyle. So it wouldn't be surprising to note that when two people hook up, that that's going to be a, you know, an overriding issue in their lives. And I think it goes back to what we started at the beginning, is that we just don't talk about what our common goals are or what our differences in savings rates or paying down debt. So I think it's just not – there's no planning in the process. So you come in blinded, and then surprises happen, and then you throw in possibly a difficult economy, and, boy, you're just ripe for problems.
Cassie writes in to us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Regarding the woman who is getting calls for her husband's debt 20 years after the divorce, she may be still getting those even if her name is not on the debt. My husband and I constantly get calls on our home phone for his ex-wife of 9 years from debt collectors for debts she incurred after the divorce. In fact, even a woman he lived with prior to his first marriage, to whom he was not married, had received collection calls for the ex-wife. Sounds like an episode treatment for Falcon Crest. But it's very intricate. How does this happen?
The creditors just want to, they're hungry and they want some money.
Yeah,
and so they're willing
whoever.
To go to any extreme to get it. I mean, if you were tied to that person at one point or another and they owe the creditor money, they've since passed it off to these credit collection agencies, which they get paid on if they collect. So that's how they make money, and they're going to go to any extreme possible to get a penny.
And that brings up an interesting question. With more information readily available and sort of an information, venerable information soup out there, and databases more sophisticated and funds commingled, is it possible that people will be on the hook longer than they want it to be in this day and age with the accessibility of financial information and the aggressiveness of creditors? Probably more aggressive than they had been in recent years.
Yes, I mean, they may get phone calls and dunning letters, but I think if you take the proper legal steps to erase your responsibility, then, you know, you have the documentation that you need, that you took these steps, you know, go with the advice of an attorney, perhaps have them pen the letter and keep a copy for you. But that should suffice. Just because someone else can get your name, you know, and hound you, doesn't mean they have legal standing to go after you.
Is shoring up finances after a divorce kind of like starting over, right, Dan? In what ways can people start over?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you basically tore something down, and now you have to put it back together again without a spouse. So, yeah, it's basically you have to start the process over. You have to look at where you stand after the dust settles from the divorce settlement, and then start coming up with your own plan. And, you know, maybe you're going to be a single parent now, and you're not going to have as much support, obviously, as you had before if you weren't the breadwinner in the household. So a lot of things have to be looked at. A lot of things have to be analyzed, and you have to put your own plan in place and move forward.
Steve in Kansas City, Missouri, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A man.
Thanks for calling.
A man. Exactly. A deep voice. A masculine presence. Please tell us your story.
Well, let my wife do all the financing, and 20 years of marriage, she's ready to get out. During this time here, my ignorance to the finances, not my ignorance, her inability to share the finances with me. She had taken all my name off all the accounts, the joint accounts, and ran up huge debt bills on us, along with closing out her IRA and my IRA. So I'm pretty much behind the eight ball right now. And divorce court's coming up, final divorce settlement property.
Wow.
So my advice to anybody out there that's getting into a relationship is to definitely keep, you know, three accounts. Each spouse keeps one, and then they keep a home account. Because, you know, I don't think this could happen to very many people, but like they said earlier, people do change.
Yes, they do, Steve. Thank you for sharing what must be a very painful and mind-numbing experience. What advice do you have for Steve with divorce court coming up? He's just learning these things after 20 years. It's pretty gut-wrenching.
Well, a couple of things come to mind. You know, he might talk with his lawyer, and based on state statute, there might be some, if there's, you know, anything left, there might be some way to be able to claim a higher percentage of that instead of the 50-50 split that you usually see. You would need to be able to, you know, track expenditures out of the family control. I think Missouri has that on their statutes, some type of that. The other thing, though, is to take a look at what you're going to be left with now. And obviously, be prepared that your standard of living is going to go down. And that's because two people living alone don't live as cheaply as one couple living in a household. So it's having realistic expectations that your standard of living isn't going to be what it used to be is important, and design a budget that takes that into account. The last thing you want to do is walk out of divorce and start ramping up debt and end up in a bankruptcy.
But people don't want to change their standard of living, even if they're getting divorced. How do you overcome that challenge, that psychological challenge?
Sometimes whether you keep the house or not is a decision in terms of how the assets are split up. It might be better to sell that house as part of the divorce and to split proceeds. But keeping a house that you can no longer afford, if you have realistic viewpoints on that, might be one of the better decisions you can make.
Helen and Lenexa, welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have just a recommendation for couples as they are, you know, going through their marriage. I've been married 55 years. Six years ago, my husband was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. About 8 months ago, it became obvious that I could not keep him at home anymore, and he is in a facility, a good facility, which costs about $6,000 a month. If we had not had long-term care insurance, I would have a hard time making our money last for as long as he might need it. And so my recommendation is get long-term care insurance when you're young enough to pay for it. It's over $700 or $800 a month if you wait till you're older. So that's my recommendation.
Thank you, Helen. She brings up an interesting point. This is actually a circumstance worse than divorce, where you're still in a marriage and one spouse is become incapacitated. Yeah. Talk a little bit about that healthcare aspect of it.
Well, that's a huge issue, and I think we'll have to tackle that one on another show. It would make a great topic. But as far as, you know, for couples that are getting divorced at older ages, which is becoming more common, you know, in those cases, I think I'm not really answering her question. I think long-term care insurance is appropriate for certain folks, but I think for those that are over the age of 50 that are going through divorce, it's very important that they understand how the retirement plans that are being divided among the husband and wife, how those are going to work and what type of benefits you can get from those, because those will play a very important role in securing one's retirement.
Joe in Kansas City, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thanks for having my call.
No problem. Go ahead.
I think my advice would be for you married to, after you get married or even before, start saving for retirement, because with kids and everything else, it just gets harder. But I think if you get in that habit of saving early, especially through like the work, if they do the automatic deduction, and when kids roll around or life changes, it's already part of your life. They don't have to worry about trying to adjust.
Thank you very much, Joe, for your contribution to the conversation. This whole idea of adjusting to change, Alex Petrovic, talk about that. That element of financial planning, being able to adjust to a down economy or a sick spouse or circumstances in jobs.
Again, it goes back to having some pre-planning done, and that would be in addition to like power of attorneys to talk about who takes care of what if one's disabled. I mean, who makes those decisions? In this town, there's some good elder law attorneys that can help when you know that there's an Alzheimer's case in the family. And then, but it's proper planning before. And I would like to add one thing to one of the previous callers. If it's true that the wife took his name off of an account or cashed in his IRA, you know, that sounds like there's an element of fraud there.
Mm-hmm.
And if he can prove that she did that, if there is anything left, like Sandy said, he would be rewarded probably if he has a good lawyer in court.
Good luck with him on that situation. Overall, Sandy Weaver, if you made financial planning for newlyweds part of your service line, what would you include in that service line to get married folks to see that this is just as much a business decision as it is a lifestyle decision?
I would include that you need to look at cash flow budgeting, which and those are just tools that two people learn how to use. I think it's important that both people stay fully informed about the finances. I think they should take a look at how their assets are going to be titled or not commingled after a marriage occurs. I think they should take a look at debts coming in. Are those going to be handled with the person who made the debt? Are they going to be prorated? Are they going to be fully joint? Those are decisions also. I think they need to look at estate plans. Do they have powers of attorney so that one can handle the affairs of the other if they're incapacitated or in a car accident and in a coma for 6 months? I think they need to look at who am I going to leave my assets to, especially in the case of a second marriage. Let's say that one couple has a lot of net worth and the other person does not. You know, if there's no will in place, state statute is going to give half of those assets to that wealthier spouse right then. Well, usually what happens on second marriages is that, you know, people use the asset for themselves and then at death they want it to go to their kids. Well, you know, they need to look at estate planning and make sure that happens.
Dan Matthews, what is your premarital service line look like?
Well, as I said earlier, I would obviously help them create a written financial plan, but I would also open up the idea of hiring a financial advisor. You can pass off the tough decisions to us. Let us do, you know, all of the analysis and then come back to you with the decision. We're the third party. So a lot of times I think we can serve, you know, as certified financial planners, we can serve within the marriage to kind of reduce the friction, reduce the argument, because we can give them the facts about what they're looking at or what they're trying to decide to do.
Our Cash Money Click of financial advisors are here, and we're talking about the money and the honey, love and finances, love and marriage, marriage and divorce, and how to handle your finances during and after those endeavors. Our guests are members of the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City, Dan Matthews of Step and Rothwell, Alex Petrovic of Petrovic Financial Services, and Sandy Weaver of Financial Security Advisors. Thank you all for coming on today's show.
Thank you.
And tune in tomorrow for a conversation with musician Barkley Martin about a new documentary from the Christian Foundation for Children and Aging. It's called Rise and Dream. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi with help from Charlie Upchurch. Up to Date is next with the Techsperts. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.